So thank you for allowing me to do that. You're the first audience that's heard it. And I'd like to now introduce Tracy Bowen, the executive director of the Alice Ferguson Foundation, and the person that really was responsible for that first voice saying, this has to be a living building. And Tracy's going to share with you some of her own experience, frustrations, challenges as the owner of this project.
He's a tough act to follow, huh? Jeez. Good morning. I'm the pushy, bitchy broad who hired the team to do the living building. Impatient, expect way too much, don't want to pay nearly what I should be. That's what I'm about, and that's what I'm going to share a little bit about. Thank you for that heartfelt side, and I'm going to kind of cut to some more of the hard stuff of what we've done and some of the positive stuff. I'd like to just get a sense. Can you show with your hands how many of you are architects? How many are design engineers or in the engineering? How many are builders? How many are owners who've had to do projects? All right, and I'm not sure who else. Maybe some nonprofits or something. Oh, landscape architect. I'm so sorry. Excellent. Okay, so you heard about my organization. I get paid to do this great job that I have, and I'm going to share basically three things and focus on three areas. How did the Alice Ferguson Foundation get to living buildings? How has this impacted our organization? And changes or challenges ahead. One thing that happens to me is I'm from Detroit, and when I go to a Canadian place, I start talking like a Canadian. I don't know why. It's because I lived I spent a lot of time in Windsor, so I have this Canadian accent all of a sudden. So, you know, our organization, as you saw, is really about the environment, and we did land use planning in preparation of what we initiated with these new buildings, and it really helped us get clarity on what our priorities are. And we really started working with the green building movement a little bit in terms of going to conferences and getting tuned in to how to do integrated design. And we were like sort of babies at that, but we kind of knew what it was like, and we knew what we wanted. And we put out an RFP and had a lot of amazing interested people. We had like 40 companies show up that wanted to do this project. And we were like, oh, my God, we've attracted the world here. For us, we're just a small little organization south of Washington, D.C. And what we did is we went through those RFPs, and we asked two architecture firms to merge. We asked them to get married for our project because both had different strengths. And we knew we were going to be really pushy and have high expectations, and we didn't think that one alone was going to be able to cut it, so we asked the two firms to merge, and they did. We have two firms, M Squared Architecture, it's Musco Martin, I don't know if any of you know Musco, and then Revision Architecture, Scott Kelly is the principal along with Jen Roselli, their partners, and all their network, and they have done a great job working with us. Our landscape architect is Jose Almanada with Aldrup Hogan, and AKF Engineers has been our mechanical. And then we have a general contractor, Marion Construction, who's David Michelson, who is a very green builder. He's a guy who came out of, he didn't start in the building industry. He worked in other realms of the world and then moved into building later, which I think is a criteria for any of us to not just be in one industry our whole life. But anyway, so he brings a lot of diversity and holistic thinking about this and has been a really good person for us to work with. And then, of course, we hired Sandy Wiggins is our owner representative and has been basically a really great team, a very smart, very green, very ahead of the game group of people. When we started, Sandy mentioned we started our goal setting, and when we started to talk about living buildings, it just seems like it fits into our mission, it's what we're about, it excites us as an organization. And we have a group of people at our organization who are very independent thinkers, who are creative, who are good problem solvers, and we are a systems people. We think in systems. We know about natural systems. And that's how we think, and we think that's how buildings should be. We get it. It's not rocket science. we think the key to this whole building, you know, industry obviously has got to be this whole systems thinking. And really what Sandy, I thought, was bringing to light is getting really deep into that connection, which it's not there. It is not there yet. And I think we want it. We're so hungry for it, and we're not there. The other way that we really got to living buildings is through, you know, being the pushy broad who's really who doesn't like a lot of structure. And I felt like LEED was a really good baseline, but it was going to create a ceiling to me and how our team was going to be thinking that, oh, here's where we have to go, and it wasn't high enough. You know, the bar wasn't there for where we wanted to be. And so you know, here's our LEED sheet, which we started looking at, and then we just decided that really is a baseline for us to launch from, but it is not where we're going. We're going beyond LEED. I think that's a really important designation for us because it set the expectation for all of us that we aren't going to look at this and it's not driving it. We actually put it aside. Is that right?
That's right.
We put it aside. So that kind of covers how we got there quickly, and then how the effort has impacted our organization is that we are so stretching our design team. As I said, they're really green people. They've done lots of LEED projects. Musco's done lots of environmental centers like ours, and really that, you know, really has a lot of. They all have what we're looking for, but I think again we're just not. We're really pushing them out of their comfort zone along with us to figure out how to really integrate. We've given them a lot of permission to take risks, and I think it's been really critical when we're pushing them against the wall. It's really important that we've given them permission. We're really pushing that we are designing for the future. And we know that we're expecting the design team to do something that hasn't really been done a lot, if ever. So what we did, being an education center, is we went to children. And we brought our design team to meet with children. We worked with the University of Maryland's Human-Computer Interaction Laboratory. And then we also have a lot of kids coming to our facility we worked with overnight. We basically posed the problem of how do we get to living buildings. And I just wanted to share really quickly some of the highlights. I think it's really interesting where children perceive. This little design was done by a child who felt that we needed to create a power cord to the sun. And, you know, they wanted to feel like they were sleeping outside. They actually knew that the buildings should connect. They knew they were given this sort of goal. There's two buildings. How are we going to make these buildings living? They wanted them to connect, to be interactive.
Tell them how old these kids are.
Well, this group of students was probably like 9 to 12-year-old students. They wanted to see grass on the roof. They wanted ladders. They wanted milk in the gutters. They wanted holes on the roof that get covered up at night. They wanted a big tree to keep the building in the shade for summer. Pond collects. I mean, these are kids that have never talked about living buildings before and green buildings per se. And here they are coming up with all these concepts that either are really validating of what we're doing. They wanted trash monsters separating the recycling. They wanted waste to come down a poop. Basically, the poop chute. They came up with their own poop chute idea. Jason would appreciate that. They wanted the water to connect to other buildings. They wanted pastures and lots of animal interaction around the building. They wanted the interior of the building shaped like a cow and squiggly and multi-leveled round, a Venus flytrap, spiral spear case. I think that was really interesting is that the kids started thinking about the building as an organ, and they felt that people would be the heart of the building. People are the heart of a building. People are the heart of a building. I think that's really important. They wanted to see rooms like stomachs of a cow. I don't, you know, think about it, you guys. Let that seep in a little bit. They wanted the building to always be evolving. They felt that we should have bags of stuff there for kids to always help keep designing it. They wanted it to be continuing to progress. It shouldn't be stationary. They wanted the floor to the floor to open and grow. They were really into the idea of a flower, the way flowers at night close and open. Is that too crazy? Isn't that kind of logical? These are the two buildings, the power cord to the sun, the water connecting, the sun connecting these buildings. The point of this, go to children. Start using kids to think a little bit about how to overcome some of these challenges. The next thing that's impacting our organization is how the design team is pushing us. And frankly, that really hasn't, the rubber hasn't hit the road yet. We have finished schematic design. In September, we start design development and we'll complete the design over several months. And our design has been very program driven. Our staff are really leaders and have been given a lot of engagement in the process. They've been really key to the design. I'm really proud of how programmatic driven the design is. That's what it should be about. What we've started to change is how we're thinking about the building is not just a place to deposit people. It's a species. It's part of our ecosystem. And we look to our building the way we're looking at cows, the way that we're looking at our ecosystem of our facility. That's a big shift for us. Is anyone else doing that? Okay, so here's the interesting part that maybe some of you would find interesting. The next step is that we're basically having to now look at the way we are behaving at our organization in order to complete the design. And basically the design team has studied our needs, has looked at what we're doing, has put together their beginning preliminary systems. That target you see is the energy systems, the water systems that we need to get to. That's where we need to be consuming from, is that target. They're doing their own design optimization to sort of look at what they could create in our living building. And then we're looking at the user optimization of what we're actually using. Right now, it's not hard to see, but there's a yellow dotted line. That's kind of where we are in our schematic design in terms of our current consumption of our energy systems and our water systems. And what we're trying to get to is down to the target. So I think it's kind of an interesting process that we're all in as the design team is kind of working with us and we're working with them to try to look at how to modify that. What will happen is these buildings will be given a budget for the year, for the month, for the week, for the day, that we need to figure out how to live within. And those students and all of our visitors will be given that budget. So we're, going to have a monitoring tool system in those buildings, and we have to modify our behavior to live within those systems. So one of the things that we're, basically that's an exciting part of our process. I think one of the challenges we will be facing is how do we present those budgets so it doesn't seem like people are living in a uncomfortable way. And part of what our challenge as an environmental education center is going to be is to help teach people ahead of time, help create the perspective and the perception of what people are going to be experiencing when they come to our facility. Currently, as Sandy mentioned, our students come and they have green shock. They're totally petrified of being outside. And now we're adding a hot summer day without maybe the typical cold air conditioning, that they might normally have at a facility. Or in the winter, it might be a little cooler because we're living within a certain budget. But for us, it's a really exciting challenge to figure out how to, again, it's that whole behavioral change that all of us need to go through in the first place in this country. And how do we use this as a leverage point to teach ourselves and challenge ourselves as educators how to convey this and help shift everybody a little bit? Does that make sense? No, it's not money. It's energy from the sun, water. I'm talking purely about the systems right now. So Oh, that's a system we have right now. It's a 12 kilowatt photovoltaic system. It's our sun garden. We're going to be adding onto the grass building. I think that we're looking to have 65 kilowatts, so a total of 72 kilowatts for both buildings. We have to live within that if we're going to be a living building. Our water is going to be completely contained system, and so we have a study of how much rainfall and what we can expect for water for the year, and we want to live within that. So this is sort of the challenge section I'm going to whip through here, is that, for me, our biggest challenge is us, is our limitations. We have really I'm really shocked. I've never been in the building industry. I've never been in design. I think it's really limited. I feel like everyone needs to get out of their world and go spend some time in something different to break open their ability to think creatively. Not creative. I think there's such creativity, but it's boxy. It's very linear. It's just shocking to me. I think that the limit for us as an organization, I think it's the key, the last part of that, is how do we use our buildings for education and transformation? How do we use education for buildings and these buildings for transformation of people? There's a real opportunity in everything everybody is doing to help people transform through their buildings, through their behaviors in those buildings. Okay, so a really big challenge right now is asking the right questions. That's part of the whole getting out of the box. We all knew at the charrette that Sandy described so eloquently all these right questions. You know, in retrospect, we spent a stupid amount of time on stuff that we shouldn't have been looking at. We should have shifted our questions. But when you're in it, and you're all going to be in it, it's hard to see. It's hard, that awareness that Sandy talks about is so critical, so you can shift the question, so you can reframe the problem. The challenge that all of you have right now is reframing the way you do business, reframing the way you think about it, the way you're approaching it. Stop approaching it the way you've been doing it. It's wrong. It's not working. It's really ineffective. And it's really hard as a client to... there's some chuckling going on in the audience. I wish I had solutions, and I actually feel like it will... I think by the time we're done with this process, we certainly need to be pushing for thinking about that. What are the solutions? I don't know what they are, and I think you guys should bring that up today with us. So that just that one question about the sunlight and the site that didn't have sunlight, we just spent a lot of time not really looking at how do we move that facility someplace else instead of really looking at how do we get sunlight to this space. That's a real simple thing, but it's a challenge when you're in a stuck way or just in a way that it's always been. Integrated design. Oh, come on. It's like a baby place right now. It really is. And you guys have got to push yourselves. Don't think that you're doing great things by we're including the construction manager and the engineers and everybody all at the same time in a charrette. You know what? It's not good enough. It is not good enough. It's not it. You got to get bigger. You got to think more creatively than that. And
I get this all the time.
I mean, it's really it's the starting point, but you're not there. You guys have got to evolve so much quickly. You think? And I'm not trying to be a naysayer. I think it's really there's big challenges, and I think it's really time to start thinking about what is really integrated design. It's really got to get broader. I think that the way the observing this from a range of communities is that the construction community still is really in a different world. And like, how do you guys better integrate with the construction industry? How do the builders work better with the design team? It's very divided still. Even though there's all these green people working together, there's still division. There's still disconnect. And I think that the other part of the process is how to really get creative about how to bring those subcontractors in who are ultimately doing the work and don't even know what a green building is. Those are big challenges to build living buildings. Getting the permits. David's here. You guys know what that is like. I think that for me personally, just we basically have been very upfront with our county, which is a very challenging county with permits, and have been. We have the chief of staff for the county executive on our board, and you know, basically said we need to get permitted in a timely way, and you guys are going to make it happen for us, and we're really pushy about it. You know, so I feel like that's all we can do. We've basically already started to frame the thinking of the county that this is a unique, unusual thing that doesn't need to have the same normal process, and that's how we work through it. That's how we'll hopefully be able to get that done. I think for us, our goal is to start building the first building next year and then the Moss building the following year. And we already know that we're sort of an early innovator, so we're going to be, you know, I think dog years are happening with green technology. So we already know we're going to be behind, you know, once it gets built. And then, of course, the fundraising is a big challenge for us that we're starting on, and we're, you know, aggressively moving to raise the funds to make this happen. So anyway, I just want to thank Jason and Cascadia for letting us share a little bit about our project. And I think Sandy's got another talk.